He rang me up from the, and asked what I was doing that evening. And I told him, and he said, well, I'd like to see you. Can you come round? So went round a couple of times. And he had, as I say, just done this tour and just flown back. Right? Yeah. Same afternoon. And we talked for a while. And I said, aren't you very tired? He said, tired? That would be frivolous.
Tired would be frivolous.
Yes.
A wonderful statement. A wonderful statement. But did he on that occasion express some of his concerns?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. I remember sending a telegram about that back to London.
And then when the secession of Katanga occurred,
yeah,
quite soon, what was the British reaction to this? I mean, Chambé was not, how was he viewed?
I don't know that. I mean, I wasn't in London.
Right.
You know, and I wasn't dealing with, apart from the few meetings of the Security Council, mm-hmm, where I went to, I wasn't personally responsible for dealing with the content.
Mm-hmm.
I think Hammersham had rather soft spot for Chambé. that I remember feeling.
Which brings me to a much later question, but you probably were not at all involved, but Cruise O'Brien, the Irishman,
yes,
who had very grave doubts about Hammersham Hill's motivation,
yes,
was there a particular British view about him, about Conor Cruise O'Brien?
I can't say it was a particular British view. I think we didn't take him very seriously. No, I don't think we regarded him as a major figure in his own,
yeah,
his own life.
Although, to continue at this point, at the end of the story almost, Hammersham, on his last trip to,
yes,
to the Congo, did not go to Elizabethville, where there was...
He didn't go to?
To Elizabethville, because there had been a lot of
yes,
disturbances there.
Yes.
And in fact, when and Conor Cruise O'Brien had announced the end of the secession of Katanga,
yes,
and when Hammersham got to Leopoldville, the British ambassador, who was fairly new there, actually protested to the Secretary General about the action which was being taken in Elizabethville.
Well, who would that be?
He had just gotten there, and
I
think his name has been mistranscribed. Well, let me see.
Scott? It wasn't Scott. Was it?
No. It's transcribed here, but I think it's wrong. It's Derek Riches.
Oh, that may be right.
Is that right? Yeah.
I've forgotten that he went there.
Yes.
Derek Riches, that's the name of
a
distinguished British diplomat at that time.
I see.
I'd forgotten he'd been there.
Yes, he was just assigned. He had just gotten there.
Yeah.
And apparently the British side was very disturbed by what was happening in Elizabethville.
Yeah.
And so protested. Yeah. But my question, and I expect you were not directly involved here, it was the British who made the arrangements for Dodd Hammersham to fly to Mandalay in order to meet Chambé there.
That's right.
And my question was whether the British had some insight, some special insight as to why Hammersham wanted to go outside of the Congo in order to meet with Chambé.
I can't.
No.
What sort of, was it a Swedish plane? It wasn't.
It was a UN plane.
It was a UN
but
plane.
But it had a Swedish...
Swedish crew. That's what I remember.
And a lot of mistakes were made because the UN plane had been used the day before, had not been completely
serviced properly
because it had been shot at in Katanga.
Yes.
And there are a lot of questions as to why
yes,
the plane was used without further servicing and
yes,
so forth and so on.
Yeah.
But the question really in the back of my mind here is, we mentioned Connor Cruz O'Brien. Was it the Secretary General's desire to avoid having Cruz O'Brien present?
Well, nothing possible. I can't say any light on that. I don't know if anyone can.
No, well, if anybody, it would have been the British, because in fact they made the arrangements for him to go there at that point. No.
Yeah.
Can you say anything about how active the British ambassador was in Leopoldville? The American ambassador was quite active.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
And also in Elizabethville.
Yeah, I don't
know. This would have been, I suppose, more of a London assessment. The peacekeeping operation in Congo was much more complicated than in the Sinai, involving political elements and involving many more troops, some of whom were not as well trained.
Mm-hmm.
But the question here is, what was the British overall assessment of the performance of those troops?
I'm sorry, I can't. I wonder who can. Have you found anyone who?
Well,
who can answer that sort of question?
We have interviewed two men who were American consuls in Elizabethville, and that's where the performance was most controversial, because some of the troops got out of hand there. There are people in the UN itself who can assess the, well, Brian Urquhart, in the tapes that he has made, which have not been published, is very, very critical of General Van Horn, who was the commanding officer, whom he considered to be a disaster.
There must be, of course, reports in the British official papers, which are accessible,
mm-hmm.
in the Ministry of Defense papers.
Which reminds me, another question I want to ask before I forget it is, are there other British people, British officials who come to your mind as being particularly knowledgeable on the Congo?
On the Congo?
Yeah.
Paul Wright went there later, I think. I knew two people who were ambassadors. One was Ian Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought he was there about the time of that.
And is he still about? He's here in London. Travel very much.
Uh-huh.
His nephew is now the chef de cabinet of the Secretary of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, really good.
They're a distinguished family.
Yes.
I knew there were two brothers, I think. So I knew Dyer much earlier.
He had been ambassador, I believe, in forget where, before going to.
Yes, he
had. His performance, I might say, in Leopoldville was much criticized by the Western ambassadors, I believe.
I imagine.
Including the British.
He would have taken a different line from them, But an interesting label now. No, I'm sorry, I can't say anything.
Let me just ask another question with regard to New York. How close was your consultation with the U.S. mission? In connection with the Congo, were you in very close and continuing?
No, not very. We were in close consultations with the French and the Belgians. But Cabot Lodge was taking a rather different line from the Europeans. Britain and France abstained on the resolution.
Right.
The resolution was sent to Singapore. I wanted the resolution to pass, as I thought the UN should be. But the Belgians have objected to some of the language of the resolution for this conduct. And the French and the British, at least, I had no contact with my government at that time. It all happened in the middle of the night. And there were no possibility of talking to that. The French, and I thought we could support them in view of the Belgian attitude to the terminology of the resolution. I very much wanted the resolution to pass. There's no question about vetoing it. I mean, either French or British could. There's no question about vetoing it. We were talking about abstaining. And the possibility of that, but the various possibilities of the resolution failing for get 9 weeks and it was necessary. But I felt, without any real evidence, that the Russians were probably supported. Nobody knew about that. Nobody knew about the Russians were going to do it. So we had some of the elections in December. I felt that was what he would probably do. And I was asked to achieve those my objectives. It's not been having any of this pretty responsibility. But getting the thing through, which is what happened.
Do you remember what the French were concerned about the Belgian existence, but then ultimately the French, like the Russians, withheld their financial contribution?
Did they? I didn't know that.
No. Yes, on legal grounds.
Did they? Yes.
That legal ground didn't come up at that time.
I didn't know. There was no talk of that.
No.
But the Italians were with us at the beginning. And I remember the Italian ambassador coming around to me during the debate and apologizing because he'd been compelled to change his mind and vote with his elder. But we started with France and Italy taking common attitude. But I think the Americans put a great deal of pressure on the Italian.
And they changed.
And he switched his
Now,
I couldn't very well say that. I should be delighted, but in fact, I was already.
Were you still in New York when the American administration changed, when the Eisenhower administration ended and the Kennedy administration began?
I was there for the election, but not for the inauguration. I left after Kennedy was after the election.
Because with the arrival of Adlai Stevenson, there was some change in the American attitude. A lot of things, including the conflict. But I was going to ask whether...
And the change in the whole... of the United States on the Assembly. I mean, I was back in New York soon after Stevenson.
You were?
Took over. And I thought, I remember thinking, what a pleasure it was to hear the voice of America in this new form.
A remarkable man. But there was a substantial change. Well, it depends. But certainly, it has been said that the Eisenhower administration did give major support.